baseball game, a day in a park with friends and family, fishing in a remote stream, work, travels, providing for loved ones, or heading out for adventures. Whatever you do, whatever you enjoy, you need your health. The original Guide to Men's Health is presented by the Washington State Urology Society to help take you through the steps necessary to get the most out of life. If you have invested in a retirement plan for your future, why not invest in your body? After all, it makes better sense to retire healthy and enjoy your future. These podcasts are a guide for how to take care of yourself. If you take care of your car and maintain it, why not do the same for your personal machine, your body? If you know you should but haven't yet, the information in these podcasts contains some easy recommendations for where, when, and how to get started. Follow the podcast as we explore men's health with renowned experts and embark on a journey towards better health. Interested in what you can do to prevent sports injury? How you can be a weekend warrior or a serious athlete? When we look at the issues that men undertake as far as what they enjoy doing, we always worry about hurting ourselves. When we meet today in the episode on the original Guide for Men's Health, we'll be reviewing sports injury and prevention and trauma with two experts in the field. Stay tuned for this episode of the original Guide to Men's Health. On this episode of the original Guide to Men's Health, we're fortunate to be with two true experts regarding sports injury prevention and trauma. We'll be hearing from Dr. Stanley A. Herring, is a senior medical advisor and co-founder of the Sports Institute at UW-Medicine. He is the medical director of the Sports, Spine, and Orthopedic Health at UW-Medicine and co-medical director of the Sports Concussion Program, a partnership between UW-Medicine and Seattle Children's. He is a clinical professor in the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine, Orthopedics, Sports Medicine, and Neurological Surgery at the University of Washington. He also is one of the team physicians for the Seattle Seahawks and the Seattle Mariners. Dr. Hunter Wessels is professor and chair of urology at the University of Washington. He is a member of the Advisory Council for Urology of the American College of Surgeons and the Eurotrauma Legislative Task Force of the American Urological Association. Welcome. Today we want to cover sort of what guys have to face who want to be active and how they can keep themselves active and avoid injury. So I'm going to start off with Dr. Herring to talk a little bit about, let's talk about prevention. What do you tell patients or the public when you lecture who want to come in and want to be active?
We tell them, first of all, that being active is the single most important thing they can do for their health. Not just for their musculoskeletal health, but for their health in general, whether it's urologic health, cardiovascular health, mental health, or any other aspect of fitness. It's so critically important. Being physically active carries a risk of being injured. Oftentimes, there are different sides of the same coin. In terms of prevention, realistic goal setting, act your age when you exercise, adequate recovery, meaning that you need to understand how much exercise you need to reach your goal and understand the best way to get that exercise. And then other helpful general medical issues, hydration, sleep, proper nutrition. You cannot prevent all injuries. As a matter of fact, anyone who's physically active is going to have an injury, but you can mitigate them by proper training techniques and recovery. And then when you are injured, comprehensively addressing that injury will help you recover faster and getting back to doing the things you love.
So there's, of course, different levels of exercise and commitment to sports. Some people, as we alluded to, are weekend warriors. We'd like people to exercise more than just a couple of days a week. We'd like to make it more regular. And then there's people who get deeply involved in sports. And in certain sports, of course, there's more risk of trauma. So those who are talking to their children about playing football, you obviously have a lot of experience with that. Organized sport through a school or a club or a program, but still we worry about issues of health? And you want to go into a little bit about what you would look at it. Somewhere there's a lot of contact, like football.
Sure. Contact and collision sports do have a higher rate of injury. Let's not forget that those sports include things like downhill skiing and bicycle riding, bicycle racing. We actually have rock climbing who have an even higher rate of injury. So there is a risk of more trauma with those sports and more injury. But once again, the single most dangerous thing that a young person can do, if they want to make sure that they die younger, have more mental illness, have more neurodegenerative disease, is not exercise. So there's a context here. We obviously want kids to exercise safely. So whether it's contact and collision sport or even non-contact sport, if your child is involved in a sporting program, the first question you ask as a parent is, what provisions have been made for injury? What's the emergency medical action plan? If there's not one, there should be one. You also want to know that their coaches are knowledgeable about technique, that their coaches recognize injury, and that there is a plan in place for access to competent medical care. When it comes to contact and collision sports, you can limit the chance of injury by limiting exposure, whether it's football, lacrosse, or soccer. Taking unnecessary contact out of practice makes sense. Teaching technique may help. There's not great data, but it makes sense to teach the proper way, for example, to tackle. Training and conditioning so that fatigue doesn't play a role. And while we are all concerned about the safety of youth in sport, the chance of catastrophic injury in a sport which is played under controlled conditions is not so much that it should stop a young person from pursuing something they like. What we really want to do is make the sport safe, but keep the kid active. As a matter of fact, the Sports Institute at UW Medicine is all about trying to expand participation and safety in sport.
So we'll come back to sports in a moment. But Dr. Wessels, when we look at trauma, there's trauma that potential in everything we do all day long, from getting in our car, walking across the street. But there are certain circumstances where we're higher risk. And if you wanted to give advice to young people, to people who are in their 20s, 30s, and older, what do you look at as far as issues of trauma that you've seen?
I think in many ways it's analogous to what Dr. Herring just talked about. It's making sure that you manage the risk. And so depending on your activity, you can manage risk differently. Get in a car, put on your seatbelt. If there's a hurricane out with gale-force winds, and there is a recommendation to stay put, don't get in your car. Don't go out to the store. And most injuries relate to this risk that's poorly managed. Whether it's the kite surfer who harnesses in when there are big gusts of wind and gets pulled up and slammed into a telephone pole, that could have been avoided. Or the motocross rider who's not wearing a helmet. Or I could go on and on. And when these individuals come in to see us, we don't tell them necessarily to stop doing these things that they love, but we ask them to approach it a little differently, make sure they're using all the safety techniques and they are thinking a little bit more about what they're doing.
So become knowledgeable about what you're going to undertake. Study it. If you can, hear from an expert or a coach who is knowledgeable in injury prevention that we just heard about. So is there a difference, though, in an adolescent who's developing versus a more mature adult that we ought to pay more particular attention to?
When most organized sports participation stops in late adolescence, unfortunately, as of today, half of kids are not active in organized sports by the time they're 13, which represents a public health challenge. So organized sports often are for young or younger athletes. Issues of growth and development, specialization, overtraining, and the skill acquisition piece are relevant in that group. Decision making, autonomy, these are all important issues. So taking care of the adolescent athlete has its own challenges. There are certain principles, though, that are germane. One is, once again, activity is good, inactivity is bad. Second is, they need to be in a situation where there's structure, organization, and some sort of planning, and then avoiding early specialization, avoiding overtraining and burnout. Many young athletes participate in their sport more days a year than professional athletes in the same sport do. Between school sports and club sports and select sports, they're playing the sport every day. There's a reason that there's an off season. There's a reason for periodized training and recovery. So there are unique adolescent athletes. There are also unique issues for adolescent athletes, but there are also, I mean, regardless of the person's age, set goals, be realistic about your conditioning, recover completely, and approach a sporting activity in a way which is enjoyable. If an athlete is unhappy, they will be hurt more and they will recover more slowly. And those are universal across the age span.
So if we move through life, and I would say that many young people are involved in organized sports, and then, as you stated, leave the sports world, become busy, whether they're working, whether they're academic and pursuing degrees, they don't seem to be as active. And then later in life, when they're working, they become even less active. So if you were to look at individuals and say, what could they do to maintain activity? It's not organized anymore. What sort of things would each of you suggest?
It's not like what can they do, it's what they must do. Without sounding like a charlatan, the benefits of exercise are so extraordinary. In adults, clearly 8 different types of cancer risk are mediated by exercise, one of them being bladder cancer, cardiovascular health, general physical health, mental health, academic performance, maintaining good cognition. Exercise is really the elixir for all of this. So as an adult, we need to find a way to be active 150 minutes a week. And that doesn't have to be extreme exercise. The more you exercise, you get some more benefits, but really 150 minutes a week, 30 minutes and 5 days a week of moderate exercise has rather remarkable benefits. So finding something that you like and being consistent about it is critical. But I'm talking moderate walking, gardening. It doesn't have to be high intensity exercise. Now there are some adults who prefer to participate and compete at a higher level, and there may be added benefits for health there, but there's also added risk. But you know, it's not a heavy lift. If you can be active 5 days a week and you can do some strengthening exercises 2 days a week, the benefits are so remarkably extraordinary. Sitting is the new smoking. It turns out that being physically inactive has a higher risk for developing cardiovascular disease than smoking. So we have work ahead of us, yet a very small percentage of adults in the United States meet physical activity goals. So there's an opportunity here to promote exercise, promote sports participation as a lifelong form of health care maintenance and prevention of illness.
So when we have individuals who take up a sport in a more serious way, say not just getting out and getting their heart rate up or maintaining some muscle mass by doing some light weights, but actually seriously involved in a particular activity. We've said that studying the activity, doing some coaching preparation, what else should we look at? For instance, if we're going to be bicycle riders, are there certain things that we've learned about bicycle safety that we know now that we didn't before? Water sports, we want to be more particular. Dr. Wessels?
Those are both sports that I love. I swim, I bike. I think the idea that Dr. Herring enunciated of having a plan for if things go wrong actually also takes a role in sports. If you're going to be biking, you probably shouldn't bike alone out on the road for long distances, because something could happen to you, you could crash, and if you don't have a buddy with you, same thing with open water swimming. How are you going to get out of the water if you get cold? So there are a lot of examples where, again, the training and the preparation matter. I also think that these sports that involve group activities are good ways to be motivating. Are the men that we're trying to help become more active? Group activities, some of the gym programs that are big now, and we all know the names.
So, you know, as usual, Dr. Wessels is right. if we could just make sure that any active person of any age wore a helmet when they bicycled, there's very clear evidence it reduces the risk of severe head trauma by over 80%. So, and like Dr. Wessel says, don't bicycle alone, and maybe make sure your bicycle fits you correctly and that you have good technique when you swim and you understand the technical aspects of the sport in which you're participating. But he touched on something very important. There has to be some joy in this, and the socialization around doing a group sport or a team sport or playing on a team as an adult is important. It is very clear that children who are active become adults who are active. So your kids will do what you do. So if you're an active family, you'll raise active kids. And I think we need to think about introducing sports participation and outdoor recreation as a family idea early in a young person's life, and that will give them a better chance to be healthy as adults.
Let's say I'm an individual and I have fallen off the wagon since I was a teenager, and now I want to get active and I decide I'm going to run. Is running for everybody, or how do you know if you can run, or is it worth running, or is there more injury risk at a certain age where maybe you ought to reconsider something else other than running?
Running has some benefits. It doesn't require a lot of equipment. You can do it almost anywhere, and you can obtain the necessary dose of exercise fairly quickly. It does have its downsides. It is a pretty significant load on your body. Running has some challenges as well. The weight-bearing aspect of running is great for bone health, but not necessarily easily tolerated as we get older. There is no one exercise which is right for everyone, and actually only doing one exercise as an adult may not be right for most people. If you're healthy, if you've been inactive for a long time and you're an adult, this is a time to check with your physician or other healthcare provider before you start any exercise program. There is risk with suddenly becoming active if you're deconditioned. And part of that assessment should not only be for your heart, but also it's your musculoskeletal system. Do you have joints which bother you? How's your flexibility? How's your strength and strength balance? So that you can plan an exercise program where you have the best success. And the other thing to remember is you're not 18, so it's going to take longer, and you're going to have to build endurance, and you're going to have longer recovery time. So you need to set this as a long-term goal, not a month or two goal. So be patient, be comprehensive, make sure you're safe for exercise, and probably mix what you're doing. Adults need to do strengthening exercises, not just cardiovascular fitness exercises. So you have to think of a way to get both.
Now, a lot of the population have back issues. The people come to you and go, I don't work out, I don't exercise because my back is bad. And what do you give them that they can replace what they used to do with their bad back to something they can still do?
You know, we have started a program with one of our faculty members, Dr. Cindy Lin, where in the sports medicine world and now even the family medicine world, we are asking exercise as a vital sign. So along with heart rate and blood pressure and weight, we're asking how many days a week do you exercise and how many minutes a day. We think it's that important. And no one leaves our office without an exercise prescription. Just because you have back pain doesn't mean you can't exercise. As a matter of fact, with chronic low back pain, exercise has been demonstrated to make you feel better. So whatever musculoskeletal malady we find, we can help you organize an exercise program around that. Having back pain or a bad knee or a sore shoulder is not in of itself a contraindication to being active. As a matter of fact, people with arthritis do better when they exercise. So if your back hurts, maybe running's not the exercise for you, but we'll find some way to help you get the exercise you need. And the added benefit, not only will your back feel better, you'll be healthier in general.
So I've been told that in addition to cardiovascular health, we need to maintain musculoskeletal health and work on at least some resistance work along with getting our heart rates up. So if both of you were looking at a population of not very active adults And they said, well, what can we do? What would be the general advice for getting some musculoskeletal fitness?
I'm going to answer it first, and I'm going to answer it differently. I'll leave it to Dr. Herring to explain how to gain that fitness. But what I can say as someone who takes care of injured patients is when we have someone fit and they come in and they've been in a serious accident, the fit person at whatever age is going to do better than the deconditioned person. I was at a rowing club in Philadelphia, and there was an 80-year-old rower who got hit by a car. Most people his age would have died, but he had enough strength and reserve in him that he could recover, and we actually got him back into a boat, and it was almost a miracle. But that's my perspective on muscle mass. I leave it to my colleagues to figure out how to get that back.
There's no question that fitter individuals seem to recover better, probably for two reasons, as Dr. Wessel said. They start at a higher level and don't have as much to recover. And secondly, they're used to being active and working through some discomfort. They have the mindset of someone who finds motion and activity to be essential. When we have patients who have been physically inactive, once we know that they're medically safe to exercise, we suggest that they start with obtainable goals. Even if they are so inactive they can't even walk briskly for half an hour, they can walk for 5 minutes three or four times a day. Any piece of exercise, any amount of exercise is valuable. We used to think it had to be a minimum of 10 minutes. That is not true. Literally every step counts. And so we help them set an obtainable goal for their cardiovascular fitness. And you know what? Lift soup cans with your upper body. Carry the trash basket. You can do simple things around the house just to start get moving. And then all you need to do is really challenge your muscular system for strength, upper extremity particularly, and core, 2 times a week. Can you do 10 push-ups? Can you use some tubing and strengthen your biceps, your triceps, and your thoracic extensors? I mean, this is not the dreaded PE class where you exercise until you drop. You don't have to do that. So we can help patients. These are pretty easy wins.
And then we have a segment of the population that move beyond just casual exercise or movement, but have now become involved in serious exercise. And they are moving into a realm of marathon runners, triathletes, mountain climbing. And you see those patients who come in, and again, injury prevention is that they've worked up to this stage.
There are certain people who have been active their whole life, and not being active to them is an anathema. They can't imagine it. And people who are physically active overall are healthier. People who are physically active actually often have less arthritis than those who aren't. And so the challenge with that group is they are going to be physically active and they're going to get hurt. If you exercise or participate in sports at a high level, you will get hurt. Helping them over time reestablish a successful goal. I mean, they may have been a 2-hour, 40-minute marathoner when they were 20, but now they're 50. So we have to help them redefine what success is. We definitely want them to be active, but we do have to help them continually goal set and also understand that as you age, you have to give yourself a little bit more time to recover. You have to make sure that you maintain strength, because strength disappears with age. Things that you can do to help maintain an active lifestyle with a realistic expectation for performance. But I wish that the biggest problem in my practice was taking care of people who exercise too much.
If you look to the professional athletes who you see and help recover from injury, are there certain specialties that people should be aware of? You say if you're a physiatrist, it used to be PM&R, physical medicine rehabilitation, but it's expanded now. A lot of the population go, what's a physiatrist?
Right. I think that fitness is not owned by any specialty. And I would suggest that whoever your healthcare provider may be, it may be a physician, it may be a physician's assistant or a nurse practitioner, it may be an athletic trainer or physical therapist or someone who works as a certified fitness instructor, you need to ask what their knowledge and interest is about health and welfare when it comes to exercise. No one has a corner on this market. And I think you interview your healthcare provider to find out not only what they know about fitness, but they know about how fitness works for you, and they know about how fitness and health work across the age span. And a talented and interested healthcare provider is an important key here, but it doesn't come with any particular specialty attached to it. I would argue that Dr. Wessels may be a better provider when it comes to promoting fitness than many people who are in the fitness arena.
I would like to build on the role of the physician to also highlight one of the problems with men in particular, and this is about men's health. And men don't go to the doctor as much, and they often will ignore symptoms. This is true of cancerous growths. This is true of chronic conditions that affect their health or their ability to exercise. And we need to overcome that. And I hope one of the outcomes of this chat will be that the listeners take a different approach to symptoms, and instead of trying to live through them and ignore them, and that's what the athletes do. Take bike riding, for an example. I do it. Obviously, you can have the wear and tear injuries to your joints, muscle tears, crashes, but then you can also have some chronic things. There's rare instances of erectile dysfunction with people who do a ton of long-distance cycling. And so when these symptoms come up, it's much easier to deal with it at the beginning. And Stan, would you be bothered if your patients ask you, well, what about this? What about that?
This is always a balancing act. You know, when does hurt mean harm? Obviously, if a patient has truly troublesome pain or dysfunction, you know, being a tough guy doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't. I mean, and so we like to know. And a lot of my job is telling people when they're hurt versus when they're injured. I mean, pain is an inevitable part of getting older. But we need to interpret that as to when it's just acceptable versus when it's dangerous. So we want people to report. That's another thing. Your healthcare provider should ask those questions. I mean, if you tell them they're a cyclist, they should know enough about cycling to ask you relevant questions. Like, you know, is your bike fit to you? You know, are you safe with your, do you clip in when you ride? What kind of helmet do you have? If you've fallen, did you replace your helmet? They should be interested enough to know the specifics of the sport and be able to advise you. But we want people to tell us. And, you know, as you take care of adults, particularly older adults, you want to be able to tell them how much discomfort is reasonable. The discomfort is going to be there, but you want to tell them how much is reasonable. So yes, they need to report. And sort of trying to tough it out. I've learned one thing in 40 years of practice: suffering is overrated.
And that brings a point to repairs. We're much better at sports injury repairs than we had been in the past. And I think threshold for a lot of people is it's preventing me from doing what I want to do. So if you get to that point where you're injured and you've stopped, definitely see somebody, because you can resume a lot of what you wanted to do.
You shouldn't make the assumption that it's over until you get advice. And like I say, a lot of times that advice is, I know this is hurting, we can work around that, but you're not in danger. Or sometimes it's, this is very concerning and let's get this looked at. We see it both ways. But don't make assumptions and change your activity level without discussing it with someone who does it for a living. We don't do that in any other aspect. If you have an accounting problem, you talk to your accountant. If you have a building problem, you talk to your contractor. You shouldn't make assumptions about your symptoms and have those consequences be that you quit being active until you find, first of all, can you fix it? And secondly, if you can't fix it, can you work around it? Because you must. I know I sound like a broken exerciser here. You must stay active.
Are there online materials that you'd recommend, or good sites that you would go to, or people who have questions about this could find some information?
Well, I'll plug the Sports Institute at UW-Madison. Our website has a lot of information about the benefits of exercise. We are soon to launch an Exercise RX platform where you can go on, place your zip code, and it will tell you affordable places near you that provide evidence-based exercise programs. We're excited about that. That's coming. And the CDC has good information about exercise. Reputable websites are not too hard to find. I would be cautious about websites that promote one approach too aggressively. But the information is there. The information should be in the hands of your healthcare provider. And there are resources, certainly in the University of Washington healthcare system, where you can get access to someone who will help you stay active.
And our diagnostic tools have improved considerably. I got a tour of the sports medicine facility over at the stadium, and just state of the art, being able to watch a runner's gait and judge how things can be improved.
Right. I was lucky enough to be involved in the development of that program, so I know all of that location, one of our sports medicine locations, but we're also at Harborview and Northwest Hospital and on the east side as well too. And you're right, it's a beautiful facility and it has great tools, and as I like to say, the tools are only as good as the carpenter. So diagnostic tools and therapeutic interventions are great. It really depends upon the skill and interest of the provider.
Well, any last summation words of wisdom or concern?
I wanted to add one other thing that's a fairly narrow but important area of men's health, which is there are a lot of cancer survivors who can use exercise before and after cancer treatments to try and help fight off the problems associated with treatment. And one of the consequences of prostate cancer surgery is incontinence of urine. And I found that a lot of men become inactive as a result of that, and then they gain weight, and then we get this vicious cycle of lack of exercise, weight gain, incontinence, and we have to break the cycle somewhere, and that could be anywhere of those three things, through weight loss or treatment of incontinence or increased exercise. And that's just an example of how a medical condition can have far-reaching consequences. And so it can be very complex.
Unfortunately, with modern surgical techniques, the degree of incontinence is much better. But the treatment that we all recommend when somebody has a mild incontinence is exercising the pelvic floor muscles. So it goes right back to that.
And sitting here in front of two urologic experts, we tell our patients that, and I hope that we're telling them correctly, that not only is cancer prevention a true benefit of exercise, but recovery and longevity is better in people who exercise after a cancer diagnosis.
And that's a whole other area, this area of being strong for surgery. The American College of Surgeons is developing programs to try and help people be better prepared for surgery. That's one of the new frontiers. How can we use exercise to improve health outcomes instead of using it to prevent health events?
As an old open surgeon, I certainly had patients recover better, quickly, when they went into surgery in better shape. Now we're minimally invasive, but I'm sure it doesn't hurt going in better shape.
And they're better able to do what you want them to do because they're used to being active. You don't have to undo the inactivity piece. They come to your operating table already prepared to be active in the postoperative period.
Well, we've run through the spectrum of adolescents and teens to needing repairs, so I think we've covered a fair degree of sports medicine. I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
This completes another podcast chapter of the Washington State Urology Society's original Guide to Men's Health. This is Dr. Richard Pellman reminding you to take care of yourself. The Washington State Urology Society wishes to thank all contributors who volunteered their time and knowledge. The information presented is the opinion of the speakers. The Society also wishes to thank Sean Fox for his invaluable technical assistance. Music theme, San Juan Bells, written and performed by Dr. Dave Weidig. The podcasts are the property of the Washington State Urology Society. Reproduction and use without the express consent of the Society is strictly prohibited. For
more information about men's health, visit wsus.org or visit your physician or care provider.